last case this morning is P.T. Kinetec Power System versus the United States of the Wind Tower Trade Coalition, 2022-14-08. Mr. DeFrancesco, when you are ready.
Good morning, Your Honors. Robert DeFrancesco on behalf of the Appellant Wind Tower Trade Coalition. May it please the Court, this case involves two categories of errors by the Department of Commerce, resulting in what we believe is an unsupported determination with respect to the Indonesian government's provision of subsidies to Kinetec. First, we believe the Commerce Department erred when it found that there was no provision of cut-to-length plate for less than adequate remuneration, specifically as it relates to both the authorities issue and entrustment and direction. Second, we believe the Commerce Department erred when it, in its recalculated upstream subsidy determination, it didn't conduct an investigation as it's required to under the statute. With respect to the cut-to-length plate issue, I'm going to start with the entrustment and direction points. We believe in the preliminary determination, the Commerce Department made an affirmative preliminary determination that Krakatau POSCO was entrusted and directed by the Indonesian government for three reasons. That there's a national industrial plan, that Krakatau, the parent company, has significant influence over Krakatau POSCO, and the alignment of Krakatau POSCO's objectives with the governmental policies. After the affirmative preliminary determination, the Indonesian government submitted what it called a minor correction, and it said, well, the steel cluster that Krakatau and Krakatau POSCO agreed to create pursuant to the master plan of the Indonesian government is not included in the master plan and is really just a commercial agreement. And they term that a minor correction. At the final, the Commerce Department said, in light of that correction, they were reversing themselves based on their preliminary determination. We don't believe that reversal is supported by substantial evidence. The standard requires the Commerce Department to address evidence that fairly detracts from what they're relying on. Their entire reversal is based on this correction, and that correction is expressly contradicted by multiple pieces of evidence in the record. Specifically, in the 2018 annual report, Krakatau POSCO's annual report says explicitly, the Ministry of Industry had established a plan to boost the consumption of additional capacity to increase national steel production. The development plan to focus on high value added products to replace import, such as automotive steel. Krakatau POSCO will put most effort to realize Master Plan of National Industry Development 2015-2035 of the Republic of Indonesia vision by working together with Krakatau Steel to build 10 million tons of a steel cluster until in 2025. That's at Appendix 7318. That expressly contradicts that clarification that was submitted after an affirmative preliminary determination, and nowhere in Commerce's final determination do they grapple with that language. In the final determination, they merely state that the annual report expresses support for governmental policies. What I just read is more than support. What I just read is an indication that Krakatau POSCO recognizes that there's a master plan and they're going to work with Krakatau, the governmental authority, to execute and further that national plan. That is, by definition, entrustment and direction. Moreover, nowhere in the Commerce Department's final determination do they grapple with why they're accepting this clerical error when it's expressly contradicted, not just in the annual report, but even in the government of Indonesia's original questionnaire response. In their original questionnaire response to the Commerce Department, they say explicitly, the project is included in the master plan as part of the domestic steel industry's contribution to support the government of Indonesia's master plan to develop the industrial sector by 2035. That's at Appendix 15307. Later, in the correction that was submitted, which is at Appendix 17462, if you go to page 17466, they identify three reasons, they call it a clarification, and identify three points that they believe why it's not part of the national plan. Nowhere in here is there an explanation as to why they gave one answer before the prelim and a totally different answer after the prelim.
But they did extensive fact-finding, and we owe them deference. And they concluded that Krakatau-Pascal was making its own decisions.
Your Honor, they did do extensive fact-finding, and all of those facts that they relied on at the prelim related to the degree to which Krakatau and Krakatau-Pascal, Krakatau is an authority, and Krakatau-Pascal is influenced by its relationship with its parent steel company, by the government of Indonesia. And the only piece of evidence that they relied on was this correction to reverse themselves, and then they went through each of the other pieces of evidence that they had previously relied on to affirm, make an affirmative prelim, and explain why they don't feel that this is sufficient any longer without actually grappling with the express contradictory evidence that's on the record. In fact, that annual report is prepared in 2018, a year before any litigation occurred. It's prepared for Krakatau Steel's shareholders, one of which is the government, and the public. And it's telling its shareholders and the public it is acting to further the Indonesian government's objectives. And now, only after an affirmative preliminary, did the Indonesian government change its story, even after it had it admitted in relation to that annual report, as it should have. You know, the first answer was the answer that explicitly talked about the degree to which the national plan was part of, and they're acting in furtherance of that national plan. So on that basis alone, we believe the court should remand to Commerce to address that evidence more specifically. But beyond that, as I mentioned earlier, at the prelim, the Commerce Department found three factors as to why they thought there was entrustment and direction.
I hate to interrupt you while you're on a roll here, but I just want you to know that many, many pages in the Joint Appendix don't have actual appendix numbers on them in the versions that we have. And so I just want to bring that to your attention, because it's a quality control problem that you want to make sure that we're able to follow and look at the pages in the appendix and not have to dig through and find them without having the benefit of the page numbers, especially when the appendices volumes, there's so many of them.
Right. Thank you, Your Honor. I apologize for those issues.
For future purposes, I highly recommend that people look at their appendix before they submit it to the court.
Yes. Thank you. I appreciate that, Your Honor. To my other point, so in the prelim, again, there were three issues that the Commerce Department highlighted as to why they found entrustment and direction. And the second one was that there is an ability of significant influence between Krakatau, the government authority, and Krakatau-Pascal. At the prelim, the department found that Krakatau-Pascal was not an authority, but yet they still found that there was an ability of Krakatau, the authority, to influence, and they had significant influence over the decision-making of Krakatau-Pascal, despite the fact that they weren't an authority. That they never address that point in their final determination, only to say in their final determination, well, Krakatau-Pascal is not an authority, and it's a private entity acting inside the steel cluster. That doesn't address why they said that they had an ability to significantly influence the prelim, and that hasn't changed. The facts haven't changed. The facts of the structure of the organization that allows them to have significant influence, none of that's changed. The only thing that changed was that minor correction. Lastly, as part of what was in that correction, we heard about, they actually claimed that there was 5 million tons of steel capacity at the time, and that hadn't changed. That's expressly, one, there was no evidence to, you saw the submission, they never actually submitted the capacity figures for the companies. The government just said it. And there's actually evidence in the record that shows that it was more than 5 million tons. That's not addressed anywhere. In addition, the Commerce Department goes into its brief and talks about, well, these statements about how there is a pattern in practice that we initially thought that the Indonesian government was stepping in to help the Indonesian steel industry, and we can see these different reports. Well, we disagree with that now. And there was an explanation that was provided, a verification that talked about, well, the support that was provided was really just in trade remedies cases and having these exhibitions. I mean, that's contradicted by the very fact that the Commerce Department initiated an upstream subsidy allegation that was based partly on a 2019 bailout of the steel, of the Indonesian steel industry. So clearly there's more subsidies and more influence by the Indonesian government that's being provided than just what was described by the government itself at verification. Lastly, with respect to the upstream subsidy claim, as we talked about in our brief, the Commerce Department is obligated, once it initiates an upstream subsidy analysis or investigation, it has to conduct an investigation. 1671E uses the words shall investigate. 1677D1 talks about when Commerce finds a program that it must also investigate that program. 1671BG2 talks about when Commerce can defer a upstream subsidy analysis, but they're only allowed to defer the upstream subsidy investigation if there's going to be an administrative review, which means there must be an order in order for there to be an administrative review. If there's no order, then I have to conduct the investigation, which they did not do here. They sat on the initiation of the upstream subsidy investigation. Only at the final did they examine facts available, using facts available based on a subsidy analysis that was from 2010. The respondents themselves and the lower court, before the voluntary remand was granted, they argued to the lower court that no investigation took place. So it's clear that Commerce did not investigate the upstream subsidy analysis that, as they should have. We asked them to do that on remand to comply with the statute, and the Commerce Department did not do that. They simply accepted, just recalculated what was the old subsidy determination from 2010 and moved on, which is a violation of their statutory obligation to conduct an investigation.
We will save you a rebuttal time if you wish.
Yes, please, Your Honor.
Ms. Speck, you're going to take 10 minutes?
Yes, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honors. Elizabeth Speck for the United States, and we respectfully request that the court affirm the judgment of the Court of International Trade. First, I want to address the entrustment direction argument presented by my opposing counsel, who claimed that the government's reversal of position from the preliminary to the final was just based on clarifications of the Indonesian government at verification. And that is not an accurate statement. Commerce explained in its decision that it had re-examined the arguments of the parties in the record. A big part of the reason why, again, as Commerce is permitted to do a preliminary determination, is just that, a preliminary determination. Commerce explained that it had looked at the role of the Board of Directors versus the Board of Commissioners, and had explained that it concluded that there was not control by the Indonesian government because of the role of the Board of Directors, which was controlled by POSCO as the primary decision-making entity. And
that's the decision-making entity that makes the day-to-day determinations, is that right?
Yes, Your Honor, and it also has the ability to bind the company, and that was the dispositive role. And none of that was not based on clarifications. Also, the fact that the RIPIN, or the master plan that we've been referring to, that was always in the record. Specifically, it's at appendix, the relevant provisions are at appendix 15939 through 15941. And that explained that does not specifically address the Siligan steel cluster. That had always been in the record. And also, there is evidence in the government of Indonesia's second supplemental questionnaire, which is at appendix 16461, which also stated that the Siligan steel cluster was a purely commercial transaction between Cracktel POSCO Yes, Cracktail Posco and Cracktail Steel. So there was evidence in the record, and Commerce considered that there considered these to be minor corrections in terms of what they actually provided at verification, which was again explaining that it was not that it was a purely commercial transaction. They explained that it was that it was a purely, this is appendix 17489, that the steel cluster was not mentioned in the national plan, which again was always in the record, and then that the steel goals remained the same, regardless. And I would note that their Commerce had also stated that its reevaluation was based on the arguments of the parties. Kennertech addressed in its brief before Commerce, the steel goals remaining the same, and that is at 17584 of the record, in which it cited its support for the position that the steel goals remain the same. In terms of the arguments that Commerce did not consider record evidence, I think Commerce has provided a fulsome explanation here, Commerce addressed the relevant record evidence. It addressed the annual report. It addressed the Jakarta Post article that the appellant raises. But importantly, even if the annual report did provide support for, did state that it supported the government of Indonesia's steel policies, Commerce did not find that it provided the requisite hook, because there wasn't evidence that the government of Indonesia was acting on those policies to entrust or direct POSCO to provide cut-to-length plate for less than adequate remuneration. Turning to the authority, again, Commerce is permitted to reconsider its position between the preliminary and the final. And here, Commerce explained looking at the record evidence, specifically the joint venture agreement, the articles of incorporation, the various ownership arrangements, that it concluded that the board of directors was the relevant was the primary decision-making authority for the entity, and that it was in fact in private control and not meaningfully controlled by the government of Indonesia. And one thing that they had highlighted in their brief was that there were provisions with the shareholder meetings that they could potentially take certain actions, and those are specifically tied to violations of the joint venture agreement. Those are somewhat controlled. The Board of Commissioners certainly wouldn't have unfettered discretion to suspend a member of the Board of Directors. And finally, I want to turn to the upstream subsidy allegation. It's incorrect to say that the Department of Commerce did not conduct an investigation. As the Department of Commerce explained in its final decision memo and on remand, it did possess sufficient information from the questionnaire responses that were already submitted make a call in terms of the requirements under 19 U.S.C. 1677-1A. It was able to conclude that there was a benefit, that there was competitive benefit that had a significant effect on the manufacturing or production costs of the subject merchandise. Specifically, Commerce looked at Kennertech's questionnaire responses, and specifically it looked at its purchases of cut-to-length plate from POSCO as compared to other imported steel, and Commerce was able to analyze that further in its analysis memo, which contains business proprietary information. Again, I also want to highlight that before the Court of International Trade, the plaintiff, or the Wind Tower Coalition, argued, and this is at 18269 of the Joint Appendix, that Commerce properly made an upstream subsidy finding based on facts otherwise available at the time of the final determination. And they also appeared to suggest at 18262 that Commerce initiated an investigation. So their interpretation of the statute, that Commerce investigates only when it comes out with a subsidy that is affirmative, is not a permissible construction, or does not make sense. Commerce is certainly permitted to use adverse, to select from among the facts available when it concludes that information is missing from the record or that it cannot be verified. And here, Commerce looked at its existing, it looked at its the CBD or the countervailing duty preamble, which expresses a preference for using existing recent subsidy determinations in performing that analysis. And finally, I just want to highlight that the limited nature of the remand from the court, certainly it 818286 contains the remand order, which was narrow. It remanded for only 30 days for Commerce to make a simple decision on whether or not the rediscount loan program was an export subsidy. And in any event, that does not change the fact that Commerce fulfilled its statutory responsibility to investigate and lawfully applied from among the facts available.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Wilson can utilize the rest of your time. So we'll give you 7 minutes if you need it.
Good afternoon, I guess it is, Your Honor. Dan Wilson from Arnold & Porter on behalf of Kinnertech, plaintiff appellee in this case. We concur with the government's arguments regarding the less than adequate remuneration issue. With barring any questions for Kinnertech on that issue, we'd like to turn to the upstream subsidy analysis and offer a few additional points. First of all, we think that the statute did not prohibit Commerce from reaching a negative determination when petitioner's late allegation left limited time for Commerce to conduct additional fact-finding. Petitioner's primary argument is that 19 U.S.C. section 1671E requires Commerce shall investigate when it finds that munitions standards are met, but that provision has to be looked at in the context of Commerce's statutory deadlines in these cases, which in this case were already fully extended for the final determination by the time that petitioner filed its upstream subsidy allegation after the prelim, nearly 2 months after the prelim was issued. So where petitioners file an upstream subsidy allegation that late in the investigation segment of a proceeding, they run the risk of Commerce either deferring until any of eventual administrative review, which is what Commerce first did here under 19 U.S.C. section 1671BG. And at that point, petitioner did have the opportunity to withdraw its petition and refile under 19 CFR section 351.311C, which is mentioned in footnote 2 of the CIT's opinion here. That was a gamble that, that the petitioner didn't take, or a move that, that the petitioner didn't take at that point after fully realizing that, that the department specifically said in the initiation memo that it was deferring because there was not enough time to conduct a full investigation. So at that point, petitioner was under the impression that the department could only either defer, and if there were no if there was no review because there was no order, the statute specifically says any administrative review, which means there's a possibility that there wouldn't be an administrative review. And it seems to be then that his counsel's construction of the statute that they're not allowed to defer in that case is absurd. So in this case, what we're dealing with is Commerce's only ability to conduct a limited investigation, and Commerce's determinations have to be based on substantial evidence. So if petitioners file a late allegation, they run the risk of Commerce not being able to develop the record, which is what happened here. So from Kinnertech's perspective, the department already did more than it should have by reconsidering in the final determination to base its upstream subsidy analysis on a 20-year-old determination. But if petitioner was concerned about the sufficiency of the allegation, they could have withdrawn the petition and refiled, and they chose not to, and that was the decision that led to the situation they face themselves in now. So as the CIT recognized, it's simply too late to force Commerce to reopen the record. There's no reason to do so. The CIT was correct in declining that request, and this court should do so as well. And finally, we just wanted to focus briefly on petitioner's proposed alternative rates. They pointed to no statutory authority or case law or any administrative precedent arguing that, that Commerce is somehow obligated to choose from other plugs that would have forced this case to go to an order when the only result that could happen under the record was a negative determination. For all the reasons we discussed in our brief, the subsidies that they proposed to use as a plug to get this case to order also had the upstream subsidy, which is precluded by statute from being, the export subsidy, which is precluded by statute from being used in an upstream subsidy analysis. And finally, they've briefly mentioned other POSCO, Crocodile POSCO specific subsidies that just simply don't have enough detail to address in any substantive way. So for all these reasons, we request that the court sustain the judgment of the CIT and Commerce's negative final determination on voluntary remand. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. DeFrancesco has a little rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just specifically, I'm going to run through a few of the points you just heard. So with respect to the government of Indonesia's master plan and the lack of reference to the steel cluster in the master plan, the master plan does reference base metals and the need for supporting base metals. In the annual report that I read to you earlier, they don't explicitly say that the cluster is part of the master plan. They say we're producing this cluster, we're going to work with this cluster in cooperation with the governmental authority, which is Krakatau. And this goes to the point you heard earlier about this is just a commercial agreement. One, we don't agree that it's just a commercial agreement, but beyond that, even if it were a commercial agreement, it's a commercial agreement between the government of Indonesia, i.e. Krakatau, and Krakatau POSCO. Krakatau is a governmental authority. So Krakatau itself is the governmental authority. It is an agreement between the government of Indonesia and Krakatau POSCO. Therefore, the government agreed with Krakatau POSCO to increase the capacity and production to support downstream steel consumption for green energy. That is by definition entrustment and direction, which is exactly what the department found at the preliminary determination. The steel cluster was an endeavor by a governmental authority because it was an endeavor by Krakatau Steel, which is a public body, and the Department of Commerce agrees that it's a public body and it's an authority. And Commerce doesn't address this in its final determination. It does not address why it chose to view this differently than it did in the prelim. Going what you heard earlier about the decision about whether they can influence, whether Krakatau can influence Krakatau POSCO, the government was confusing the standards for what's an authority and what's entrustment and direction. Entrustment and direction is about, are you acting pursuant to a government policy and can the government influence your actions? At the prelim, they found, despite the fact that we don't think you're an authority, for all the reasons you just heard, you do have an ability to influence decision-making, which is expressly what they found at the prelim. Yet they don't address that in the final determination at all. They simply say, well, you're not an authority, therefore we're done here. Going to the upstream subsidy points, in the upstream subsidy allegation that was filed, we included both the 2010 subsidy determination that the Commerce Department made with respect to cut-length plate and a whole host of additional programs that were referenced publicly about the bailout for the Indonesian steel industry in 2019, debt restructuring, the provision of land for less than adequate remuneration, electricity for less than adequate remuneration. The Commerce Department in its initiation said, we're initiating, but we're going to defer it. Well, they didn't say we're initiating on only these programs and not those programs. They were initiating, they were going to conduct an investigation and an administrative review if they got to one, which they never got to, and they had an obligation to at least investigate. We filed that allegation in a timely manner, pursuant to the Department of Commerce's rules, and it was something that they could have and should have investigated once they took that remand. They had an obligation to do that. Your Honor, I see my light's expired. If there's no other questions, I'm happy to sit down and let everybody get to lunch.
Thank you, counsel. We appreciate all the arguments. The case is submitted, and that concludes our arguments for today.